This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Hello and welcome to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Thank you for joining us. We're your hosts. My name is Marcy Davis. And my co-host is my amazing service dog, Fenway. And we're excited to be with you today to talk about our favorite subject, working dogs and working animals. And today we're welcoming two guests to the show, Peter Sellis and Sharon Gattas. And Peter and Sharon are part of the California Task Force 6, which is one of only 8 FEMA urban search and rescue task forces in California in the United States. And they're one of just 28 nationally in the United States. So they are based in Riverside, California, and the team responds to earthquakes, floods, building collapses, and other disasters requiring specialized rescue capabilities. And most recently, the team responded to the catastrophic floods in Texas, where they worked with cadaver dogs to help with the flooding recovery effort. So please, we have so much to talk about with our two guests today. So come right back after these quick messages as we welcome Peter Sellis and Sharon Gattas to the show.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. Hello, Peter and Sharon, and welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Hello, Sharon. So glad that you're with us today. So, yeah, well, Sharon, why don't you start? Tell us about yourself. Just briefly introduce yourself and tell us about your background and your current role with your dog.
I'm a FEMA canine search specialist with California Task Force 6. I've actually been in the system and working a dog for almost 35 years. One of the first deployments we went on was the Oklahoma City bombing. We've been on Katrina, 9/11, pretty much all of the disasters that have been happening. Recently, like you mentioned, we've been to Texas with HR dogs, the human remains detection dogs. So we have both live find and human remains dogs that work on the team in the system.
That's incredible, Sharon. And Peter, your turn.
Well, Peter Sellis, I am the emergency services coordinator for the City of Riverside Fire Department, and I'm a canine handler, and I run the canine program. I'm the canine coordinator, but I also am a handler. I have handled human remains dogs for quite some time and live find dogs. I don't have as much history as Sharon. I came on right before 9/11 and certified my first canine, and we deploy in, like she said, both live find and cadaver. And I went and cut my teeth on cadaver by volunteering to go work combat in Iraq for the United States Army with a cadaver dog, especially looking for our missing in action personnel. And then we had some auxiliary assignments also, but I went to go get a lot of experience, and then that's carried me here. And unfortunately, we do a lot of recovery work, especially in the last year. We've had quite a bit, not just the Texas floods, but some other. We've had hurricanes. We've had fires. Everything in the last year has been kept us very, very active.
That's active, Peter. Yes. Oh, my goodness. And such just heart-wrenching, heart-wrenching, sensitive work. Well, I have to ask you both, and I'll let you start, Peter. What inspired you personally to dedicate your career to this really stressful work that you do?
What inspired me initially is I grew up with shooting, hunting upland game and birds, and I wanted to train a dog as a bird dog. And the dog that I started to do that with, I took a general obedience class, and it connected me to Sharon Gaddis. And here I am. I went to learn how to do just a group general obedience because I wanted to expose my hunting dog to other dogs. And that turned into a seed that got planted and germinated and has grown into this. I've been doing this rock solid ever since then. And that was in 1998.
Man, that's a long time ago. That's awesome. Well, I know people ask me so many times. I just can't tell you how many times people say, how do you get involved in this work? I want to work with a dog. How do I do this? So Sharon, I want to ask you that same question about what inspired you personally to dedicate your career to this field. But also the second part of that question, Sharon, will be how do other people get involved? Because you sucked Peter in really well. So tell us, how do someone do that?
You know, for me personally, I was exposed to the search and rescue community through my husband, who does general search and rescue and mountain search and rescue. So I started looking around, was able to go to a conference and hear from four big groups in California that were doing SAR, and this was in the late 80s. So from there, I partnered with California Swiss Search Dogs, which has a connection to the Swiss, and they would come over once a year from Switzerland and train us. So initially, that was my introduction. And then at the same time, it was after the Loma Prieta earthquake. So California and the nation was putting together the task forces, certifying dogs. We were coming up with a certification nationally that we could get all of the dogs on the same certification process. So I was part of that group. So that was initially how I got on. And for anybody who wants to do search and rescue, particularly with dogs, I would say look at local groups. Their local sheriff's department normally will have a canine search and rescue group, either in the county or just a local general group. In California, we have CARTA. There's local sheriff's groups in the counties throughout California that also do that. So that would be the best way for somebody to kind of go volunteer and get an idea what is required. It takes an inordinate amount of time to commit to training a dog to do this, and then continually training yourself and the dog and the skills you need to do this. So it's a huge time commitment, and it's a long-term time commitment. So they would be best to go take a look at it and see if they even are interested in it.
It does seem like a lifetime commitment just from listening to both of you and your experience. It really does, Sharon.
A passion, right? If you can find something you passionately love and are able to do that in your life, it takes a lot of commitment, but your passion pulls you through, because no matter what you're doing, if this is something you love, and Pete and I together both love working the dogs, having them actually be able to make a difference in the families' lives of these people we're looking for because of something we've taught them is an amazing ability to put out there in the community. So it's something we love. It's productive. It does something, pays back. It's a community service for us. It pays back to our community and across our country when disasters happen. So we love that, and we get to work in something we're passionate about.
I can only imagine the level of personal satisfaction that you must feel, and achievement and accomplishment with yourself and your incredible canine with this work. I mean, that's just the events that you both have experienced just seem so daunting, but yet so rewarding, like you're saying, Sharon. Well, I do want to ask you, Peter, what are some of the biggest challenges that your agency faces when you're going out on some of these deployments? Tell us about that.
Well, if you're asking agency challenges, it will always be funding in the off time. But when you're out deploying, The challenges become, we're well cared for, we have good medical care, veterinary care, all of that. But the challenge just becomes working your dog in this austere environment and keeping your partner, your friend, your buddy, your canine motivated to do the job each day without affecting the job that they're doing. And I say that by, you know, if you just send a dog out all day long and he never finds anything, at some point he doesn't feel successful. We teach them they're always successful at training. So just keeping them motivated and allowing them to want to continue to play the game and to do it at the professional level that we do it. And I guess what I should say is a lot of times family members are watching us do a search. So motivating your dog in that search is not advantageous for what you're doing. So again, you have to find places and ways to keep your dog motivated. You have to find places and ways to get your dog to decompress, to let a little stress out at the end of the day. I think those are your challenges. Because again, I'm just working an animal that I have a relationship with. So we're just having a good time all day, supporting each other.
Yes, yes.
And, you know, I have a dog that if I give the leash to Sharon and walk away for something and come back, every time that I walk back up, my dog is so excited to see me because I'm his whole world.
Right. So
just keeping it fun for him and keeping and helping the community. I mean, the challenge is motivation.
Mm-hmm. Well, can you give us an example, Peter, of what you do for that motivation? Is it a toy? Is it food? What is it that you do for your dog?
So we will, in any discipline, we will put out what they look for in a controlled environment, not in the environment directly where we're searching or where the disaster has happened, but we'll put out a source for them and reward them because they don't get their toy just to get their toy. They get it as a reward for clearing an area, finding something, those types. So we motivate them with their paycheck, which is their tongue toy. And then, you know, sometimes motivation is as simple as, and I don't want to, you know, downplay the professionals and canine handlers, but it's as simple as maybe a little wrestle love session on the bed at the end of the day.
Yes, we have that at my house every evening. Yes,
right?
Yes,
right?
Yes, yes. I love it. I love it.
And it's special to watch, even if Sharon, our canines, we're able to share a room because our canines, we can work with each other. And watching your teammates on the bed having a wrestle session and you're doing a wrestle session, you know, the dogs are just in heaven and they're light up and they smile. That's what brings them back.
That's right. And it is a smile. Yes, yes. I love it. I love it. Well, Sharon, you have been on so many different disasters and major events. Can you tell us about what role partnerships or collaborations play in the work that you do with your canine?
Well, we normally go out, you know, in groups and we'll be assigned different areas to search. We work with our team. I can work with Peter and his dog, or we can work with other handlers, their dogs. We also work with other searchers, the firefighters who are out there searching with us. So it's, you know, having a dog that will work among many people, be able to fit into whatever we need to do to get to our search area. That was going on many, many different boats across rivers in the last few deployments. Sometimes it's going on an ATV or, you know, whatever we need to work with the different searchers in the different areas to get to the area we're searching. It's not always just easily accessible. So besides just working with hand in hand with other dogs, if we need to go into an area that's been searched and have our dog work that area also, or working with different entities, whether it be Border Patrol or fire or law enforcement, whatever we need to get into an area to search. And so the dogs have to just be able to manage and handle whatever pressure we put on them, whether it's helicopters or ATVs or whatever, to get to an area we need to search. You know, in Katrina, we were flown everywhere. In Blackhawks, Pete's been flown lots of places. When we worked at the Sheriff's Department, we were flown lots of places. So they have to be able to just, you know, be able to accommodate whatever we need to do to get, and then get out of that, whatever we needed to get there on and search.
And how do you, Sharon, how do you build that level of confidence in your dogs to deal with all those environments and transportation systems?
right? You know, basically you start with a very high drive dog. So we test all our dogs and make sure that they have a high level of toy drive and that they will literally jump off a cliff for a toy. Yeah. And then they have to still want to do that on a very unstable surface. We have many people who come to us and the dog has toy drive on the ground, but then we throw the toy up onto rubble where it's unsteady and difficult to get up and down. And the dogs have no interest in their toy at that level of difficulty. So the dogs who do FEMA Urban Search and Rescue on the type of environment and unstable surface that we do it are very few who actually make that cut. So if they have that level of toy drive and stability, confidence, all of those things, then we can teach them ladders. We can teach them to go, you know, on difficult surfaces. But back to Pete's point, it's a relationship. So even a high drive dog has to have a good relationship with their handler to trust us and take our direction in difficult times.
That is so cool. You have the best of the best of the canines. That is so awesome. Well, we are going to take just a quick break, and then we're going to come back and keep visiting with Peter Sellis and Sharon Goddess, because we have so much more to talk about with them and their incredible experience and work. So come right back.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to Working Like Dogs on Pet Life Radio. We're visiting today with Peter Sellis and Sharon Gattas, and they're talking with us about the incredible recovery work that they do as part of an elite California Task Force 6. And before the break, we were just talking, Sharon, you were sharing with us about the relationship and the motivation that these dogs have to have in order to do this work in these really, really challenging environments. And I just want to ask Peter, what has been one of the most surprising or unexpected lessons that you've learned from your dogs when you're out working with them?
I would say probably the most heartwarming and eye-opening was watching my train detection dog become a therapy dog after we had had some KIA on a mission in Iraq. And I was there as an HR, a human remains dog handler, as a contractor. I'm not military. And some of our platoon was killed. And to watch my dog leave me and disobey me to go over to very emotionally distraught young men and start nudging them and interacting with them and even getting them to throw a water bottle that they were holding, and he would go get it and bring it back and put it in their lap, and just kept doing that. And this dog basically zeroed in on the guys that were struggling the most. They'd lost their closest friends, and it was eye-opening because he felt the emotion and went to it. And we hear about this. We hear how our dogs develop and they have the same emotions and chemicals in their brain as we do, and they, you know, emit the same endorphins when we do. But to see this dog do this, that I absolutely had never been trained for that, it showed me what a powerful relationship we have with these animals, and that they're capable of protecting us, they're capable of loving us, and they are capable of supporting us emotionally. That was eye-opening beyond.
Oh, that is so beautiful. And that's it. That's that magic of that human-animal connection that is so hard to articulate until you see it. I feel that way every day as a person with a disability. And I'm still, even though I've been partnered for over 30 years with the service dog, I hear what you're saying, Peter, and I see it and experience it. And man, it's like magic in a bottle. It just is. It's such a gift and such raw beauty. That's just so pure. So, so pure. Well, Sharon, what about you? What's some of the most, I can only imagine the most surprising lessons that you've learned from your dogs over all these years and experiences?
I would say that just watching them make those finds, it for me just makes a checkmark paid in full, like all the time, energy and effort that we've done with the dogs really makes a difference in the end to all the time we've put into this. For me, it's just watching that DNA come through, their hunt drive come through, and then just go out in very difficult circumstances and difficult weather and, you know, difficult terrain and just do their job independently, you know.
And get it done. Yeah, they get it done. Yeah, yeah. But stellarly. Yeah, they, yeah. That's so lovely. Well, tell us about your canines that you have right now, your partners. Peter, tell us about your canine partner.
So currently, I have Riley. Riley is a Belgian Malinois. We think he's at the end of his career, but we think he's somewhere 8-9 years old because Riley was dumped and was rescued by a rescue organization that contacted us again because my friend and mentor Sharon was connected to them. And so Riley, who survived out in the desert for a little while on his own, came to me and has been this incredible animal that has taken me to an FBI selection for being on an FBI team of detection dogs. And he's taken me to all these great deployments. And I say great, but I just mean major deployments. Riley's been a really special dog to have. He's a super confident, well-mannered, overall accepting dog. And he's just a fun Malinois because I have a Mal that likes dogs and people.
That's amazing. Yes, Malinois are, they are, boy, talk about some high energy dogs that really need strong handling. That's wonderful. Wow. Well, and so will you get to keep Riley when Riley retires? That's always another big question our listeners want to ask.
Yes, Riley is 100% my dog. And when we retire dogs, even if they're a city asset, they stay with their handler. It's just part of that. And I don't think Riley would have it any other way. I'm his whole world. And he's right now, he's my whole world.
I was going to say, and you are so lucky to be riding his little coattails. Yep. So his superstardom. That's so wonderful. Well, that's fantastic that you get to keep him. And that is he has a wonderful future in retirement as well. Just getting to be with you. He'll be super happy. And Sharon, what about your current dog?
My current dog is Harley. He's also a Malinois. And he was also a rescue from the same organization. Harley's been a little more difficult. He had some baggage when he came in. So he's not as overtly friendly. But his drive carries him through. So the work was always in the forefront of his mind. He'll manage to get through any situation as long as he can go to work.
He is a focused working man.
He is. Yes. Nothing else enters his mind. He's really not in it for the pets or the fun, although Pete has won him over with cantaloupe and bananas. So.
I could see Pete doing that. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yep. That sounds wonderful. Well, and he deserves cantaloupe and bananas. Yeah.
His favorite.
Yes. That's excellent. And how old is Harley?
Harley's also 9.
Okay.
So I have another young one coming up so he can retire when he tells me he's ready.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to ask you about that, about when do you start bringing in the next one as you want to transition from one dog to another?
It depends on the dog. It really does, because if they're still physically fit and able physically, they can work, you know, hopefully into that 10, 11 year old area. I really have noticed over the many dogs I've done that around 10 is really the max. That is really what we should be putting on a dog, because with 10 and 11, there's a huge difference in them physically. And, you know, Pete's saying is always so true. It's, can this dog do a 21-day deployment? Yes, they could do 1 or 2 days, but can they work as hard as we work for 21 days? You know, that's asking a lot for an 11, 12-year-old dog. So yes, we really look at, you know, that 10, 11 being when they can retire out if they're still physically able. So really, you know, 9, 10 or so, then we start bringing up another dog.
And that's really similar to the service dogs, at least in my experience. Yeah. Yeah. It's very similar. But what you're asking these dogs to do, I can only imagine the physical strain on their little bodies. Yeah. That's a big ask.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it could be sooner. I had a dog that, you know, at 8 went and had a big issue on a test, or he had a heart tumor we didn't know about. So it just depends on the, you know, on the dog. And they'll show you a lot sooner because this is such a physical job if they have a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. It's, and that, again, is that relationship.
Yes.
Yeah. That you have, that trusting relationship. Yeah. Because, yes, when my dogs have needed to retire, there's no question. They tell me very clearly. Yep. Yeah.
100%. So, yep, yeah. We can all see it.
Yeah. Well, Pete, can you share a specific success story with us that you've experienced out in the field about the impact of your work with your, with Riley?
Yeah, I can. I was very proud of my animal. Well, my buddy, Riley. I mean, he's a bed dog. Yeah, I can try and sound like a canine handler, but the reality is he's my bud. Riley, during our work in the Maui wildfires in Hawaii, took me across a number of burnt out structures on a property to take me to a body. And as I watched him work, and as I was working him on this massive piece of property, and I was watching these behaviors, you know, I wasn't putting it all together. And so as I'm chasing my dog down and going across this property, because he's not responding, he's giving me intelligent disobedience because he has detected what we've said to work. And I wanted him in one area. He took me quite a distance. And even when I said, hey, this metal roof's too hot, I don't want you to go there, I want you to do this, and I was directing, he completely blew me off and then gave me a rock solid alert. And I realized what I was looking at was a person that had been burned over. And I was so proud of his ability to take me such a distance and to do, like, hey, this is what I do. It doesn't matter where you ask me to search, I can do all of this. So it was a special moment to provide closure for that family, but really to see my dog really show me that regardless of what I tell him, he knows how to do his job really well.
That is, that's amazing. That's amazing that he would be so confident, and but to trust you too, Pete, so that he can see. I'm sure he was saying, no, this is it, trust me. Yeah, because it is such a trust between you and when you're out in these areas, so isolated, some of them, and then so hazardous with whatever has happened, like a fire. That's incredible.
It's a special feeling. And it just right now I'm smiling huge because
I know, me too.
I remember the feeling of watching him and going, what's wrong with my dog? All of a sudden he's not listening. He always responds, all these things. And then I realized what was happening. And you're like, oh, wow. Not only do I owe you an apology, but you're a freaking rock star.
That's right. You rock. Yeah. That is just, yeah. It's just, again, it's hard to articulate that to someone until they've experienced it. Yeah, that is just, that's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing that. And Sharon, I have to ask you, what's been one of your most memorable moments with one of your dogs in your work? I can only imagine. It's hard for you probably to pick just one.
Yeah, you know, gosh, I'll pick kind of my first one. I was asked to search along a very busy freeway. And it was because an accident had happened and they were missing some and of the person they have recovered. And the family just wanted, you know, to bury this person. So my dog went along the area, the BHP had closed the area, and they were a little bit miffed because it was rush hour and they had to close a lane of the freeway and were asking us how long. So I sent my dog off and lo and behold, he launches in the air and sits, which was his alert back then. And I look in the large group of trees and can't see anything, but the coroner comes over and parts it and looks in and says, it's right there. Then I thought, and my dog's sitting there the whole time like, listen, where's my toy? Where's my toy?
Come on.
Where's my toy? Yeah.
Yes.
So then I reward him and I walk up the on route to the CHP and I said, was that fast enough? And it was 7 minutes.
Oh,
my
goodness.
So it was like, oh, okay. That was good. So, you know, it was fun for the dog and for us to be able to get out and do what we've trained for. It was productive because we were able to quickly finish this and the family was able to do what they wanted. And everybody, again, collaboratively worked together and to get this done really quickly. But that was a a moment of absolute trust in your dog that you're like, okay, really?
I mean, it took longer probably for your dog to get dressed and ready. Yes.
It did.
But they are so good. They are so on top of it. Yeah, that's just
what they can do is Pete and I all the time just think what a dog can do when trained properly, put in a situation where they are successful, because we always have to get them downwind of whatever they're searching so they can actually smell what they need to smell, is amazing. And it always amazes us. And that's what keeps us doing it and makes it so fun for us to work a dog.
Yeah, what a privilege and an honor for you two. Yes. Well, tell me, what's next for each of you? What projects or goals are you both currently working on? Pete, you can go first.
Well, I'm going to answer for both of us, and I'll let Sharon, you know, join in. But we both have new mouths that are training. I have one training to replace my Lifeline dog. And Sharon, as she said, has got a new one to do her human remains dog. So we're enjoying training them for the disciplines that we know, but also looking outside of search and rescue and learning other styles of training and different things we can put on our dogs and just make a better partner for each of us. So I'm having a really wonderful time with Reap, who's my little guy, and it's just been a real treat. And again, bringing another dog into the household with two working mouths, the challenges that it does. But that's the current big goal right this minute, is just bringing the next one online. And then right behind that will be Riley's replacement, which in its own way will be sad, but just letting them retire and live the life of, shall we say, Riley, it will be really nice. But the project now is training the next generation and training and mentoring some of our next generation of handlers.
How fun. That is exciting. Yeah, to see that, to see all the work you've done so far, and then to get a glimpse of the future and all the possibilities of what work you'll get to do. That's a gift. Yeah, that's wonderful. Do you want to add anything to that, Sharon?
I don't think so. It was said perfectly.
That's right? Pretty great. That sounds like a fun house to be in. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I love it. Well, you two are just, you're beyond inspiring. You are. And all of you and your pack of all the incredible dogs that you're currently working and the ones that are coming. So I do want to ask you one last thing before you have to leave us. And that's, because so many of us, myself and our listeners, I know they're going to be inspired by your story. How can people get involved or support your work?
You know, I just think people can get involved locally in search and rescue. It doesn't have to be dogs. It can be Pete helps in his city doing the search, which is a civilian volunteer for disasters. And all cities mostly have them. But if they want to look at the dog portion, local sheriff's departments, they can look at and volunteer for a while and see if it's something they want to do. There's volunteer places for disasters, you know, in every city and every county. So they just kind of have to look in local government for that.
Okay. And that's how we can all do it. It's in our backyard and we don't even know it. Yep. That's great advice, Sharon. Yeah, that's great advice. Well, thank you both so much for being with us today. And I can't begin to say or express enough gratitude for the work that you're doing with these just phenomenal canines. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'm sorry that you have to do it, but boy, I'm so glad that we have teams like you two and your canines that are out there helping us. Thank you.
Marcy, thank you.
Fenway, thank you.
Thank you for having us. The two of you have been great hosts.
Thank you. It's our pleasure. Yes, yes. We love to hear about working dogs and the work that you're doing and changing lives every day. So Sharon, thank you for being the incredible mentor that Pete says you are. I believe it.
All right. No worries.
Thank you both. And thank you, our listeners, for joining us. We're so glad you could be with us. And we love to hear from you. So please keep your emails coming. You know, Fenway and I love your comments, your questions, and your ideas for future shows. So you know you can email us at Marcie, M-A-R-C-I-E, at PetLifeRadio.com. I also want to share some exciting news. I've been working on a brand new children's book called Humphrey, the Hopeful Helper. It's a heartwarming story of a little yellow lab puppy with big paws and an even bigger dream to become a service dog. And this beautifully illustrated book is coming soon, and I can't wait to share Humphrey's adventures with you and your family. So be sure to join our mailing list at workinglikedogs.com so you'll be the first to know when Humphrey the Hopeful Helper is released. I promise you don't want to miss this one. Thanks so much and take good care.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.